Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Yes, indeed, The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production here with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, and a special guest today, author of Not a Brand New World, It's Called A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. His name is Scott Bedbury, and we'll have him on here in just a little while. Also have a Fusion 5 coming along with Patrick Meyer to talk about branding. In a special feature. Let's see, what else we have this hour? We got Good Is the Good. Okay, The Wacky World of Marketing, too. So there's just an incredible amount of things jam-packed into this first hour of The Advertising Show. By the way, The Advertising Show is also streaming live online at theadvertisingshow.com. That's where you can also communicate with us throughout the week and let us know what you think of the show or ask some questions. Mm-hmm. You can do it during the show, too, as well.
Right.
So, it's the weekend, and we are here and have Scott on in just a moment.
Yeah, how was your week?
Wonderful.
Yeah?
Busy.
You know, I'm excited about having Scott on as a guest. If you're familiar with Nike's Just Do It campaign, or if mm-hmm. you're familiar with, of course, Starbucks, this fella was involved in both of those companies as a chief marketing officer. And, it's going to be a great show.
Good. Yeah. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. This is something that this is actually out of Associated Press out of New York. It says here, catchy slogans aren't for most people. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Just Do It, mm-hmm. let's think about this for just a moment. Maybe we can ask Scott the same question. Quick, which company has the slogan, The Power of Dreams? Do you know that, Brad?
Viagra.
Viagra.
No?
No, that's not right.
That way.
Well, if you don't, you're not alone. A survey released this past week found that most Americans can't match even the most prominent advertising slogans with their corporate owners.
Hmm.
How about that? On a list of taglines for 22 of the nation's most heavily marketed brands, only 6 were recognized by more than 10% of those surveyed.
What were those 6?
Well, the relatively new slogans for Circuit City stores, We're With You, Staples, mm-hmm. Inc., That Was Easy, that's a Staples one, failed to register with a single person in the 1,021 people asked in the July survey, and they say it definitely sends a message. The only slogan recognized by at least half of the survey's respondents was, always low prices, always. Who would that be?
Walmart.
That's exactly right, which is identified by only approximately 64%.
Well, and you know why people probably remember that?
Because it's the truth.
Well, the slogan, that's right. It reflects the brand.
Yep.
It reflects what they do.
Now for the answer. In contrast, Honda Motor Company, The Power of Dreams, which is recognized by less than 1% of those surveys, says little about its brand,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you think about it, think about Honda. It's a very well-made Japanese vehicle.
Sure.
Also made now in America
in Ohio,
certain brands. The Power of Dreams, does that relate to the product?
No.
Does it relate from the consumer standpoint, back looking at the product?
It sounds to me like somebody came up with something and they all agreed upon it. They said, man, that's good. Let's go for it.
I think the last dream I had was, well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, that's for another show.
Yeah.
It has a female doctor on.
Uh-oh.
There you go. Either that or maybe a Rush Limbaugh show.
Yeah.
We've got Patrick Meyer coming up here. Do you want to say something before we do that?
Other than the fact that Rush has been in the news all this past week.
Yeah, can you believe that?
I'll tell you. You know what we're going to do?
What?
I'm going to mention on today's show about the prescription drug addiction that you have.
Jeez.
And I'm thinking that we'll get a lot of publicity out of it.
I think we ought to get Rush on our show to do a little feature, don't you?
Well, and I'm thinking about finding out what that – I mean, it's a strange name, but we're going to get the name of that prescription drug that he's been allegedly taking.
Yeah.
And we're going to invite him on, and we'll pay him in pills.
Okay.
That it's not nice.
No, it's not nice.
Jury's still out on that.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens.
Okay. Let's see what happens with Patrick Meyer here on The Advertising Show.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's The Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Let me share with you something that took place at the Rolling Stone Conference for Young Adults. It's a little bit of a confession, but also an interesting insight. I was on a panel focused on connecting to the street. As a marketer, working with clients, I thought, how do I take cool or connecting to the street and use it to build my damn brand? Step one, if you're even thinking about going near cool, make sure you climb into the DNA of your target and the key influencers that determine cool and where it's going. You want to be out there on the street talking to hip, cool people about what's really going on. Start with insights. Number two, make sure you define what cool is and what the street is for your brand. Because one brand, like Timberland, it may be all about urban culture, or it might be about hip-hop. But a different brand may be all about extreme sports in Orange County. So, connecting to the street, define your street. Number three, build a roadmap that's true, that's credible, and that's multi-year. Don't go and buy a celebrity and say, well, we've now got a pop star. You will die immediately trying to do that. Number four, your biggest barrier to connecting to the street is your management. Your management will not have a clue as to what cool is, so you need to bring it back to them. You now have a roadmap on how to connect to the street. Build it into your marketing plan. Build it into episodes that are powerful. Think in a more innovative way. Use different ways to connect to this target, and also mix it with your overall marketing effort.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
That's some good advice, too. The DNA, digging into the DNA. I think that's what part of the stuff that Scott Bedbury did with Nike and with Starbucks, for that matter.
Yeah, I'm sure he would agree with that. We'll get his thoughts on that next segment. Ray, do we have time for me to read this on Martha?
Yes, you do. You got 2 minutes.
Okay.
Can you read it in 2 minutes?
You know, it used to be you had to say Martha Stewart. Now you can just say Martha, like Cher and Rosie and other people. Well, it is true. This is going to be crazy, but this is true. I'm reading this. Okay. While Martha prepares for her defense against insider trading, no big surprise there, one diehard fan is turning to advertising to lend her a hand.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah, a guy named John Small. He's a Martha supporter who founded the website, write this down, SaveMartha.com.
Yeah, right.
Hopes to be putting up a giant poster in New York's Times Square protesting her innocence.
Really?
Yes, he's working on this. Apparently, he claims that he's received $3,000 from other Stewart supporters, and of course, the board, though, on the other hand, in Times Square.
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive.
$20,000
right.
For 1 month. That's Clear Channel's board that he's looking at wanting to purchase for this. If this John Small guy succeeds, visitors in Times Square will be greeted by a picture of Martha alongside the caption, are you ready for this?
What?
If the stock sale was legit, you must acquit.
Okay.
Now, I'm wondering if Martha will be wearing one of those black cotton ski caps in the picture, do you think?
I don't know. The guy sounds like a fanatic. That sounds a little bit strange.
Well, you think about it. You know, why not an animated board showing Martha when she was on CBS Morning Show with Jane Clayson? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just coming out, the M-Clone controversy. And remember Martha was saying, let's chop this salad. And she was going, no, let's talk about your problems.
Right.
Created a little bit of a little
coleslaw
problem.
Yeah. A little bit of Greek salad or whatever the heck. Scott Bedbury is on the way. A New Brand World is the book, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. And that would work well, considering the fact that we are in the 21st century.
Correct.
On The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth, in just a minute, we'll be back with Scott.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
I'm Ewell Gibbons. Many consider me an expert on natural foods like cattails. Yes, they're edible. I look for natural ingredients in my food. That's why grape nuts is part of my breakfast. This is a wholesome cereal made from wheat and barley. These natural ingredients are baked into crunchy nuggets and fortified with 8 essential vitamins.
Problem is, you'll dip those things into the grilled them in butter or something like that.
In those days, I think the pesticides were more legal, so he died from eating that natural food.
Eating the pesticides?
Yeah.
Well, he could be right about that, too. Mm-hmm. Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth, the classic spot with Yul Gibbons, as we get a chance to spend some time this hour with Scott Bedbury, global brand strategist and author. Scott drove two of the most visibly successful brand strategies in recent business history, Nike's Just Do It campaign and Starbucks' reinvention
the coffee category. Did you see, Brad, that Dunkin' Donuts is coming out with high-end coffee?
I did see
Wrong.
That. They should stay with high-end donuts.
Yeah, they probably will. Yeah, they got high-end donuts. Mm-hmm. Now a free agent and a dynamic speaker, Bedbury brings to his audiences brand concepts that can help any corporation strengthen its business. His new book is called A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. And Scott, from Seattle today, it is great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us on the Advertising Show.
Oh, glad to be here.
You know, my question about what you said, Ray, is what the hell took Dunkin' Donuts so long to figure out they need to get in the game there?
See, I don't think they need to get in that game. Well, I think that they're like, you know, I don't think they belong there.
What are your thoughts, Scott?
Well, I think everyone wants to upgrade their product over time. As people's tastes and palates change, you do want to stay in step with that. But it's hard to compete with Starbucks.
Yeah, it really is. Let's lay some groundwork here. Curious, after a long and successful career at Nike and Starbucks, why you decided to leave the comfort of corporate America and go out on your own?
Well, you know, I'd actually made that decision when I left Nike, but Howard Schultz at Starbucks seduced me to step back into the corporate side one more time, so I gave him a 3-year commitment, and I call it my 3-year coffee break from doing what I really wanted to do, which was write a book and help a number of different brands and different industries.
And you originally had spoken with the CEO, I guess, of Starbucks at that time, pitching him to become one of your clients, and before he talked you into joining his company, correct?
Yeah, he was my first consulting client that I called on, so I guess that happens to consultants, but I've learned to say no much better.
Yeah. So was he kind of a wired guy to work for, or is he on decaf at this point?
Howard, I don't know if Howard necessarily even needs coffee. He is probably one of the most positive and sort of outgoing and uplifting people you'll ever meet. He's one of those that sort of lights up the room when he walks in.
Mm-hmm. You say he seduced you. What did he do, buy a cup of coffee or something like that?
Well, he actually did serve a really good cup of coffee in his office when I met him in the spring of 1995.
I would hope so, huh?
Yeah, but I just got a sense that here was a man with a mission and a vision that was clear in his mind, and he was one of those people that inspires people around him, you know, which is kind of a rarity these days in corporate America. And it was a little tiny company by comparison to today's standards. So I thought, what the heck? Let's try and take another one on a rocket ride.
And you were a part of the acceleration of locations, I suppose, and a lot of growth during your time.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of retail growth. In '95, I think we had about 350 stores. I think I left, we were about 2,200. I think today they're closing in on 8,000, but. As importantly, we sort of redesigned the entire store experience in '95. So what you see today was really created almost 8 years ago.
You know,
we laid the foundation for the grocery channel with bottle Frappuccino and Starbucks ice cream and strategic partnerships like United Airlines, and then we opened our first store in 1996 in Japan. And the international business has been very strong for them.
Certainly, obviously, part of your revenue growth was a strategy of extending your brands through new channels. But, you know, often here on the show, Ray and I both use Starbucks as a great example of building a brand without advertising, quote unquote. Would you agree with that concept? And if so, how?
Well, absolutely. And it was by necessity. When I left Nike, I was sitting on about a $300 million war chest for worldwide advertising. And at Starbucks, the total marketing budget was about $2.8 million, of which about half of that was G&A for the marketing and design group. So we didn't have a choice. We didn't have a media budget, really, to draw from. So we focused on what mattered most, which was the customer experience, and that was the impetus, really, to completely rethink the stores, how they felt, you know, for the consumer and what kind of experience we were creating.
So what did you bring from Nike that you were able to use at Starbucks as you described that?
Well, a lot of things, actually. Those two brands have a lot in common. Both are very customer-focused, focused on the end user, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we applied an insights technique, basically called a big dig, as the very first step, really, at Starbucks. And that was to provide a very broad, deep context around the coffee experience, and not just in the United States, but around the world. And rather than going in and testing taglines and potential ad concepts and store designs, we did none of that, nor did we test concepts at Nike creatively. But it was really just about getting to know the consumer and what they were looking for and what the best possible experience was with coffee And then we reverse engineered back from there.
You know, and I know a lot of people listening would automatically have their head going to a focus group or some traditional research methodology, but your approach is certainly not that. Talk a little bit about that, Scott.
You know, I think it's, and it wasn't always that way. I mean, I came out of the agency side after journalism school back in the early 80s, and I worked at an Ogilvy affiliate, Cole & Weber in Seattle, and we were certainly, you know, immersing ourselves in the traditional marketing practices that were still somewhat in their zenith back then. But the more I got to understand non-traditional thinking brands like Nike, I realized that it was our responsibility to know the consumer. And each of the function heads inside that company, whether you were a footwear designer or advertising head or whatever, it was your job to be the best at that, possibly around the world even. And we never usurped or displaced our own accountability or own responsibility for making important decisions and put them on the lap of a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
We look to consumers to inspire the creative process, but not to judge it and not to define it.
We've heard that repeatedly here on the show, and of course it's unfortunate because many advertisers, and you know who you are, go to consumers and look for them to give a confirmation on your creative strategy or the like, and that's really giving way too much credit or power to a person sitting in a focus group, don't you think, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. Particularly judging advertising concepts. I mean, to be really honest and frank, there's probably, you know, 50 people on this planet that I would say are unbelievably gifted at evaluating a rough idea, you know, both for strategic fit and all the creative possibilities that can come from it.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes people think that a group of folks in Dubuque, Iowa, are better mm-hmm. judges of something creative than a handset of people? I have no idea. I think what's happened, frankly, in this risk-averse environment that we have, and it isn't just today, I think it's been growing for 10 or 15 years, I think we're using focus groups a lot like toilet paper. I think we're covering our backside with them.
Mm-hmm. And so you can pass the blame on to somebody else in terms
exactly.
of...
Exactly. The wheels come off.
All right.
The heads don't roll. They just go back to the three-ring binder of the study that was done and say, wow, it's funny how that happened, but I guess it happened.
You know, I've sat in my share of focus groups, and I guess the I remember years ago.
For the free food, didn't you?
Well, I was on the other side of the glass.
Oh, the other side? Okay,
yeah,
good.
We were passing notes to the moderator, but what I saw interesting was I would look out there and see those 12 sitting around the table, and I'd say, who the hell are these people, and why are they here? And usually it was
the daylights out of me.
And we'll talk more about risk aversion, which does exist in corporate America today and agencies, and we'll do it after the break.
Our special guest today is Scott Bedbury, author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. Happy to be talking to Scott today from Seattle, and we're going to take a break for the Wacky World of Marketing, which is next, and then we'll come back and do some more of this kind of stuff here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Don't go away.
World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Washington, where Reuters reports a radio contest challenging listeners to have sex in public places for a free trip to Boston's Sam Adams Brewery has won the broadcasters a $357,000 fine from the FCC. The fine ruling 13 stations owned by Viacom violated federal indecency standards, in which broadcasts of 5 couples purportedly having sex in famous New York locales. The contest led authorities to charge a Washington, D.C. couple caught in St. Patrick's Cathedral with obscenity and public lewdness. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
When you say but, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say but, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best. When you say but, you've said the word that means you like to do it all.
Back with you on The Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth in a classic spot. Well, it's time for a bud.
Saturday, or why not?
Why not? Yeah, absolutely. Scott Bedbury is our special guest, author of A New Brand World, Eight Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. And we're glad to have Scott on the show today.
Scott, we have several email questions that have come through, and I'm not going to get to all of them, but one surrounds just wanting to know your definition of branding. So why don't you give it to us?
Well, I think it's a really good question. I think everyone has a slightly different definition. I'll quickly give you mine. I think it begins with the definition of what a brand is, and that is basically everything we think or feel about a company, a place, a person, an object. Just about anything can be branded. Religions are basically brands. But branding, to me, it's so much more than the corp identity process a lot of people think it to be. Or a lot of people today just equate advertising with branding or marketing with branding. And I think the smartest approach to take is to understand that everything a company does is part of the branding process.
Mm-hmm.
The people it hires, the way it treats Wall Street, everything affects the brand image. So brand development, which is really, I think, the Uber practice, if you will, under which things like marketing and traditional marketing practices fall, I think the game is brand development. And in that game, everyone has a role to play.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's been said that all companies are branding, whether they know it or not, and I thought that was very well said many, many months ago on the show. I wish I could tell you who said that, Ray.
Someone in the know,
yeah.
No doubt, right?
But,
yeah.
Using Starbucks, and both Ray and I, myself more than Ray, go to Starbucks, and if you use that out there as you're listening as an experience, as a brand, you know that when you hit the door, you've already seen some signage that's consistent, and you have a smell, and you have a visual experience, and all of those things, and as well as an audio experience. This is really what you're talking about, right, Scott?
Yeah, and I think it's funny. They now call that experiential marketing. And in 95, I don't think that term existed, and we were just trying to do right by the customer and leave nothing to chance. So we examined every sense of the human experience, if you can imagine that, but nothing was random. I think it really was, there was a lot of rigor and discipline, particularly in the employee training piece.
There's a good example of what Starbucks does with Cisco. We are involved with Cisco Corporation, the food company.
Mm-hmm.
And they recently hooked up with Starbucks, of course, so now they're participating in food shows and things like that. They are the most unique, classy, upscale, comfortable, warm, fuzzy, friendly exhibit at the whole place. It's really incredible to see how they actually market their brand, even at the food shows to these people.
Well, I guess they're able to catch on to the fact that they have to maintain that same feel at the trade show level as they do at the retail level.
Incredible job.
You know, last segment, Scott, you mentioned risk aversion, and I think certainly there's a lot of that going on today. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Scott Bedbury, who was formerly CMO of Nike as well as Starbucks and many other fine companies, and currently on his own with his company, what is it called?
Brand Stream.
Yes, Brand Stream.
A global brand development consulting practice.
Right, and we keep repeating that. We'll have to send him a bill. But I wanted to ask you.
.com. Yeah, we forgot that.
Yeah, when you go back to when you were at Nike, Scott, how many campaigns or ads, for that matter, would have never gotten off the ground had you gotten involved with copy testing and scrutinizing this closely?
Well, I think there's certainly a few of them that we would never see in the light of day, and some of those were our best spots. But I think probably more realistically, a lot of them would have run, but they would have had half the impact that they would have had in the form that we took them to market.
You think they would have been compromised?
Sure. I think what happens with a lot of research is we just sort of take the edges off a potentially big idea, and by the time we're done, there really are no edges. There's just some kind of a round orb, that goes out there. And it just becomes safe and unremarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think budgets are too tight these days to spend a lot of money on marketing that people just simply don't notice or even think about.
Mm-hmm. So companies large and small, when let's say they're asking you as they hear you talk about branding, What's the first step in developing a brand strategy?
Well, I think you got to figure out, you know, where you are first, what your brand means, and not just to consumers, but your own employees and all the stakeholders in the process.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fair amount of denial out there in the corporate world in terms of what they think their brand means to people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the start, and that's sort of what we do in the consulting side. We do something of an audit, if you will, and really try and, you know, make sure everyone has a good dose of reality, and then we talk about where they want the brand to be someday. And there's a big gap there. There's always a gap. Nobody's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And write a few brand development strategies, which may take years to satisfy, under which things like marketing can be brought to bear on it. But one of the most important brand development strategies I see these days involves people. It's employees. And if the company doesn't walk the brand talk first, there's really no point in putting aggressive marketing campaigns out there to drive people to a retail concept or to a product that simply doesn't work.
Yeah, only to be disappointed, right?
Right.
And it's that churn that is the expensive dynamic today. I think you look at the phone companies, and companies like AT&T probably spend $1 billion to $2 billion a year really doing what amounts to churn.
Mm-hmm.
Bring people in, and then they lose them 6, 9, 12 months later.
And yet Starbucks has done a great job of keeping people employed and giving them incentives to want to stick around.
They have one of the lowest attrition rates of any retail concept in the world, and I think that speaks to the need for great employee benefits, but it also speaks to what happens when the karma, if you will, inside a company is good.
I think a good example of that would be the MCI WorldCom, how they're trying to reinvent themselves now with Michael McDonald. We've got to take a break here on The Advertising Show. Scott Bedbury is our special guest, A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. And we'll be back in just a minute with more of Scott and Ray and Brad.
Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Burnt. You burnt the toast again.
Picky, picky. Want coffee, Erwin?
Sure. I'm a glutton for punishment.
It's a different coffee I'm trying.
Your coffee's always trying, Yolanda.
It has ground roast flavor.
It has ground roast flavor.
It's Taster's Choice from Nestle.
Whoop-de-doo.
Hobbit Erwin. It's the freeze-dried.
Back with you on The Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth, and a classic spot there for Taster's Choice using real live actors. What a great concept. It's nothing new. They've been doing it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the lady from the Bob Newhart show. I don't remember her name.
The tall lady with
the tall hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The secretary.
Yeah. What is her name?
No, I don't remember.
If you know, email us, okay?
She has a poor brand and poor brand recall.
She hasn't done a lot of spots lately either. Oh, well. Scott Bedbury is our special guest, author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century, with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Had a wonderful opportunity last summer, Scott, to read your book, A New Brand World. And I must tell you, as I read, refreshed myself on the content prior to our interview, I believe everything you have written here still holds true today. You talk about emotion drivers as they relate to developing one's brand in your book. Talk a little bit about that, Scott.
Yeah, well, I think what we're seeing is an intense level of commoditization. A lot of products are, if they're not a lot like, you know, each other, at least in the consumer's mind, they are. And I think what separates brands today is the emotional connection and the emotional resonance, if you will, that they have with consumers. And I think that's what great brands do, is they find a way to connect with people on a much deeper level and connect their product to an experience that's a lot more meaningful than perhaps just the physical benefit or what we used to call the unique selling proposition. And I think that's where you see brands like Disney that connect themselves with the powerful emotions of families and children and being a child, or Nike with the physical and emotional rewards of sports and fitness. And Starbucks, frankly, it's connecting with that timeless human need to take a 5-minute break and to gather your thoughts or to have a meaningful conversation over something as simple as a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. So do you strike a balance between the value of the brand as it relates from an emotional standpoint versus just a personal value to the consumer? In other words, what they benefit from the product or service?
Well, I think that's the connection point you have to make. I think you look at a company like Volvo, they've built their brand on safety, and it's not just how they define it. They sort of reflect what's most meaningful about safety from the perspective of the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually in the family mode. It's sort of protecting your family via their car. So it's making those sort of meaningful, credible, and believable connections. I think a lot of companies simply go out and try and pull people's emotional nerves, if you will, for the sake of doing that, for the sake of getting noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Benetton is probably one good example of that. I'm not a big fan of that technique. I think there's plenty of fertile material that is probably a lot more relevant to people and, frankly, more consistent with what the brand's all about.
Mm-hmm. I agree. In 2003, it appears that, and certainly for the last few years, that a lot of companies are attempting to brand themselves, and they do it in the most obvious way through advertising channels, yet I don't think they're looking beyond that, or they're making efforts to brand themselves that are blurred or getting lost in their advertising message. Do you think that in that kind of advertising environment that consumers are exposed to today, that brands are becoming less distinctive, Scott?
Becoming less
distinctive.
Distinctive. Well, yeah, I think they might be, but again, I would go back to the whole pretesting phenomenon, and I think that's what's making a lot of this work look the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's trying to meet the expectations and the comfort zone of mainstream America. And once you go there, I think you're going to end up sort of creating a lot of sameness just by that process. So I think that's one of the bigger challenges we have.
Some would suggest that if there is a great deal of sameness out there, that's a wonderful opportunity for a company in any particular category to jump out and be noticed by doing something different, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the greatest risk in business today is to be risk-averse.
Mm-hmm.
I think the greatest risk is to be like everyone else. And even if it makes sense and consumers say that's just a fine path to take, I think being unremarkable is deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're seeing an awful lot of.
And so why is there not much risk-taking today?
You know, I think it starts at the top. I think we've got a lot of senior management these days in companies that perhaps maybe comes out of the financial side where things can be neatly, you know, stacked into numbers, and it's very black and white. And, you know, the most important and the most difficult decisions we'll ever make in business and in life can't be pre-quantified in advance. I'm sorry, they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest things you can do usually have long-term impact and long-term value, and very few companies try and account for value beyond the immediate quarter, if not the immediate month, in terms of to justify an expense or some kind of decision. And therein lies probably the other great challenge, is taking the long view. And I think once you take the long view, you begin to do things that are riskier in the short term for financial performance, perhaps. But I think if you get in the pattern of doing that, every morning you wake up, you're experiencing the benefit of something you did 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 years ago. It's like pennies in the bank.
Scott Benberry, we're going to have to take a break here just a moment. Scott is author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. Go to brandstream.com for more info, or go to your bookstore and pick up the book. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Nobody can call George Whipple an old fuddy-duddy. This new sign is right up with the times. Maybe this will stop the ladies from squeezing Charmin bathroom tissue.
Please don't squeeze the Charmin, indeed.
As if that could make me resist Charmin's cushiony, soft texture. So squeezably soft.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and a classic spot with George Whipple. Then giving the classic example of the thing, if you tell somebody not to do something, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a good way to sell your brand or sell your product.
You know,
don't buy that car.
That's true. And, you know, there's a gentleman, and his first name's Luke, and I don't know his last name. He wrote a book called Hey, Squeeze This, Whipple.
Don't know.
Well, no, he's going to be a guest on our show.
Okay, we'll learn his last name.
We then. Will by the time he gets here, hopefully.
Hopefully so.
I think it's about 3 weeks from now. But,
yeah.
You know, the title of his book, Hey, Squeeze This, Whipple. you just got to read it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great book.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Hey, here's something for you and for me, actually. Diageo, D-I-A-G-E-O, has...
liquor folks, yeah.
Bows creative for its Smirnoff relaunch out of New York. J. Walter Thompson. They're trying to try the vodka brand, and trying to make it neat, N-E-A-T.
To drink
or
it
cool,
neat. Yeah.
Neat.
Mm-hmm.
They got 15-second TV spots, print ads that they're running, $140 million behind it. They have a brand new bottle with an olive, a twist, and a shot glass and a shaker and a celery stick to play up the drink. Drink is undiluted. Smirnoff is also releasing a revised execution of its brands, of its other stuff as well.
Well, when you and I were in Chicago a while back, we had several relaunches of vodka. It wasn't Smirnoff, though.
No, it wasn't really.
And it was neat, because it was in a martini
glass.
And
it was good, yes. Yeah. It was very good.
Yeah.
What we do, what we try to do is look at the good and the bad, the flip side. The A side is the good, the B side is the bad side of advertising, and what we're doing this week is looking at the good side, giving you a little bit of insight of from our perspective of what to do when you try to attempt advertising, which is not easy. You know what I mean?
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
So what you got for us this week in the good?
You know, last fall, a couple of executives from Tyco International were indicted on charges, 35 felony counts, actually, including enterprise corruption, grand larceny, falsifying business records, and they both pleaded not guilty. The trial, Ray, just got underway this past week, and both prosecutors and defense lawyers are urging jurors to pay attention to details and not to be distracted by the large sums of money involved in the case. That'll be easy, right?
Right.
Well, in this week's Wall Street Journal, and I believe this ad is an example of an ad that really needs a full page for impact. You know, I'm not a big fan of full-page ads because people do read for editorial reasons as opposed to the ads. But in this case, we have an ad from Tyco, and I thought it was a very courageous ad because it really does what Martha tried to do back when she ran into a little problem with her company,
right.
Mediacom. The headline here says, "We signed on because we believe Tyco has a bright future. We signed below to show you we mean it." And it has about, you know, roughly 14 executives there standing in front of what is presumably their building.
Yeah.
And here's all of their signatures from the chairman of the board and other, you know, CFO, corporate governance, general counsel, et cetera. And they're all standing there. And, you know, the people you see pictured above held leadership positions at companies like Motorola, GE, Honeywell, United Technologies, International Paper, et cetera. Now we work at Tyco. Why? And it goes on to explain that. Here's an example of trying to take a tarnished image of a company,
sure.
A company that, you know, it's a huge company. It's a $37 billion company that sells real products around the world and touches people's lives in ways that I'm sure many don't realize. And they've done, I thought, a very good job of addressing, in a timely fashion, of course, the issue of Tyco going to court and dealing with a couple of executives that, you know, didn't play fair, I think, allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. But anyways, a very good ad, and I think it is on strategy. It does what it needs to do, and I think it's a good example of how to do it right as opposed to, you know, when Martha took out a letter in the Times, I think it was, when all that broke out with mCloud.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, this is a humorous part. Can you see the visual from there, Ray?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm saying about 14 executives there. Why do they all have their hands in their pockets? Are they afraid one of those guys are going to reach in and take their money clip or something? They all have their hands in their pockets.
Yeah, that's the photographer said to do that.
Well, the photographer should have said, take your hands out of your pocket. Yeah. Anyway.
Hey, you know what? That looks like the Constitution. That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. That's a very
the signatures.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Think about that.
Yeah.
And think about the concept of the whole thing, relaunching that company with brand new people, kind of like relaunching our country.
Well, and, you know, they take the brands of other companies like a Motorola, GE, and Honeywell, and they transfer that brand image to their own company by way of putting that up front and saying, you know, we're executives from that company, and we're now with Tyco, and it's a great company. So I thought it was a very well-designed ad that's on strategy.
So you can learn something from that, too, and apply it to your own strategy, whether it be big or small. Doesn't matter how much you spend. If you do it right, it works. If you don't do it right, it fails. As many things in life, right? Exactly.
In addition to the money it costs you.
Brandstream.com is the address of Scott Bedbury. Go check out the book. It's A New Brand World, Eight Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. It's got an orange cover with an egg on the front. So you can look for orange books and find it at your favorite bookstore, and it'll probably be it, okay? On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. The Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. By the way, always go to our website to find out what's going on, too, with the Advertising Show, theadvertisingshow.com. It's where we stream it live, in addition, of course, to being here on the radio. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production on the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. This is a Big Radio Midgets production, and of course we stream live in addition to being on the air on a radio near you across this country. We also stream live on the web at theadvertisingshow.com. That's a great place to send your questions throughout the week. Get in touch with us during the show, because we don't have a phone here. We got a refrigerator, but no phone.
Right.
No?
If you want to send a virus, that would be ray@theadvertisingshow.com.
Yeah. By the way, I got your message that I want a free lunch. That's wonderful.
Did you get that?
Yeah, I got that. That's great. Yeah. I told my wife, I said, give me one of those cards. I said, watch, this is going to win.
I'm going to take a stack of your cards with me from now on. Hey, you know, Ray, you mentioned theadvertisingshow.com. It's also a great place to, if you're in and out of your car today or any other day listening to The Advertising Show and you wish that you could catch more of today's guest, in this case, Scott Bedbury, author of A New Brand World, gosh, go to the website and sign up for the archives and listen at your leisure. During office hours while you screw off and still get paid for it. No, do it at your own risk.
Do it on your own, not on company time. Do it on your own time.
Right.
Okay, because we don't want to be responsible for you getting in trouble.
And if you own the company, it's your own time. Do it whenever you
want.
That's
exactly right.
Anyway, it's a great place to go for archive programs as well as listening through our website.
You have heard lots of stuff going on with cell phones these days, where you can switch your phone company but keep your telephone number.
I've heard that. Is that still? Has anyone tested that yet?
No, but it is going to be something big beginning the 24th of November.
Yeah, because it's not up yet.
No, $1.5 billion plus advertising blitz will be blasted at consumers through the end of the year, getting you to change your phone from a Sprint to a Verizon or whatever they want and keep your number. Mm-hmm. That's actually a real cool idea.
It is a cool idea, and they're also talking about, which I don't like this, white pages for cell phones. And they're saying they're trying to get that through to where people can access other people's cell phone through an information type source, and of course the cell companies are saying we're not sure we like this, and others are saying no, you should like it because it'll promote usage, and it does make sense. But on the other hand, I'll be one of these people that pay extra money to not have my money. Yes.
Excuse me. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't necessarily. Well, I'm unlisted anyway. I don't like that. Like it at all.
Yeah.
I'm on the do not call list too.
Me too.
That seems to be hung up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Arnold. Arnold's in.
New governor.
Yeah.
Well,
I could just see a Borowitz thing for Arnold. It would be, let's see, what would it be? A recall election for Arnold or something like that.
Well, whoever would have thought that Arnold and his wife would be moving to a smaller home, moving into the governor's
money.
Instead
of $30 million, he's only making a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah. Aww. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be great fodder for Letterman and Leno and all the other.
And Leno was part of that whole thing too. He was the guy who was on with the introductory speech or the welcome to the new governor.
Mm-hmm.
So Arnold and the First Lady Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
did a spoof a week ago on Saturday Night Live on that. It'll be interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Mary Lou Quinlan is a part of the advertising show. Just Ask a Woman is the feature, and we're going to play it for you right now.
Everybody talks about it.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
What's up with women's weight? If you look at most ads, you'd think women were at their skinniest. But with the average American woman wearing a size 12, well, actually it's 14, she's fudging it, the real money is being made in the burgeoning plus-size market. Women will tell you two stories about their weight. The public story is that they want to feel good about themselves and be loved for who they are. Ironically, Hollywood gets that. In sitcoms, it's the bigger women who get the best lines, whether it's Karen on Will and Grace or Mrs. Romano on Raymond. How does that translate to consumer goods? Comfort is emotional code for clothes that stretch and food that nurtures. Women's private story is that most women have a secret hidden in their closets. It's the pair of jeans that haven't fit since college, but hey, you never know. Women swear to me that they will work out or lose weight someday. They haven't given up on being thinner. And women hate the anorexic models, yet they still check them out. Won't you choke if you see one more ad with a skinny woman doing a yoga backbend for a low-fat salad dressing? As a marketer, how do you figure out what women want weight-wise? When you're casting commercials, find models who look like someone that women would like to talk to, not just who the director would like to date. Does she look like she downs a piece of cheesecake every once in a while? Would she let out a belly laugh? It helps if she has a belly. Whether you're selling pants or peanut butter, remember, the mirror in her head is full of hope and forgiveness. She could use a little of both from you.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Thank you very much, Mary Lou, on The Advertising Show.
It reminded me, my wife asked me last weekend, Brad, did this pants make my butt look big? And I said, well, first of all, I'm not going to answer that, because either way, I lose, you know?
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Either you're lying to me, or I can't believe you're telling me this. Actually, my wife's...
Just put your fingers and go, la, 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 la. I didn't hear that question.
My wife and I have been married for many years, over a decade, and I think her butt looks fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's for me to look at, Ray. Get your eyes off of that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Scott Bedbury is our special guest today here on The Advertising Show, a new brand world, 8 principles for achieving brand leadership in the 21st century. And we'll have Scott on here momentarily with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
You know, Martin Sorrell, CEO of WPP, the second largest ad agency holding company in the world, gave TV Network something to think about last week in a comment that he made to investors at Goldman Sachs in a conference in New York. And I must tell you, Ray, I thought it was a pretty courageous statement. He said advertisers have to find an alternative to network advertising because it's simply becoming too costly. And, of course, that's the understatement of the day. Sorrell added, the strategic objective is to steer clients away from traditional advertising and into more traditional marketing services, including direct marketing, entertainment events, and sponsorship programming.
Really?
Currently, at his company, the split between traditional and non-traditional at all of the WPP agencies is roughly 50-50, according to Sorrell. And over time, he believes that shift will somehow go to more like 2/3, 1/3 in favor of non-traditional advertising, and marketing. So it'll be interesting. You know,
I don't necessarily believe that.
Well, I got to tell you, this year, upfront network media was up. It was up over last year. Advertisers are paying more this year than they did the year before.
Yeah.
They're getting less in terms of audience than in years past.
Sure.
And networks would argue, hey, it's called supply and demand, folks. And the price is up because the demand is there.
Okay.
You know, until I guess you find a easier way to do it. Is this Christmas music or church music?
Whatever you want.
Okay, thank you. We'll talk more about that next segment.
With Scott Bedbury, come to join us next here on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. We'll be back.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Look what the guys on the team gave me. King of the beer frame. Well, I may not be the best at picking spares, but when it comes to picking beers, I'll pick a kingpin every time. Budweiser is the king of beers.
Well, for the longest time, too, it was Ed McMahon talking all about that stuff with the Clydesdales and all that kind of cool stuff. With Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe on The Advertising Show, and our special guest today is global brand strategist and author Scott Bedbury. The book is called A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. You can find out more by going to brandstream.com, and we'll repeat that in just a little while. Let's see. Bedbury is a genius at unleashing brand potential through innovative products, creative positioning, careful distribution, and strategic partnerships. At Starbucks, Bedbury helped the emerging regional coffee company grow to several thousand stores, while also introducing the brand into new channels of distribution and opening markets overseas as well. Boy, now you've got Panera Bread in some places around the country, too. I know in a couple of cities that it's in right now. That, to me, would be a bit of a – that would a little bit of a competition for Starbucks. Scott, welcome to the show. You're out of Seattle today, and you are on the advertising show.
Glad to be here.
Did your wife write your bio there, Bedberry is a genius?
I don't think so. She's my best judge and my critic and supporter. I don't think she's ever called me a genius.
Yeah, well,
He wrote genius, she changed it, and he changed it back.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Delete.
Undo. It's good to have someone in your family like that, Scott, to bounce things off of for objectivity, isn't it?
Well, she's, ultimately, she's far more creative than I'll ever be, and she was way up in the executive ranks at Nordstrom, and I was just, slogging the streets as an account executive after school.
Mm-hmm.
She's making more money than I was, and she decided to start the family or raise it, and we have an open understanding that I can at any time switch jobs with her, and I'd love nothing more than to raise my two kids for a while.
Well, when you said open understanding and switch, my mind was going in a totally different direction than what you just described. Let's talk a little bit about the new "I'm loving it" McDonald's campaign. You know, a lot's been written about McDonald's, and certainly it's no secret for anyone that reads newspapers and business sections that McDonald's has been struggling. Most recently, and I don't know about you, Scott. I have my opinion. I'll wait to hear yours. But the "I'm loving it" campaign that we're now seeing on the air. What do you think of that?
You know, it's a really hard thing to judge. You're looking at a brand that's been sitting on 40 years, I suppose, of success for the most part. And, the world just moved under their feet, and I think they're on a very controversial category. And to invoke the word love, that's a very delicate path to go down. I think a competing chain, has a line, it might be regional, I saw this the other day, but if loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right, relating to it like a big, juicy cheeseburger. And that's taking it over the top. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, sort of laughing at itself. But I think that's what happens. It's the Goliath syndrome. That brand has gotten so big, they're going to take a lot of shots no matter what they do.
You know, someone who is not in advertising and marketing, but a dear friend of mine, we were talking about McDonald's about a year ago, and he has a couple of children, and the prime target for them, a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old around in that area, a couple of them. And he said, Brad, I'll tell you what's wrong with McDonald's. He said, have you been in a McDonald's lately? And I said, no, I have not been in a McDonald's lately. And he said, the stores are dirty. He said, the service is not there. The quality of food sucks. And, it goes back to a lot of what you write about, speak about, and have written in your book, Scott, which is, if you don't get your product and your service tweaked and get that properly positioned for the consumer, then, the I'm Loving It campaign or any other multi-million-dollar campaign just...
Or even the food itself begins to not matter. I don't think any of us have been without the experience of going into a fine restaurant, being served phenomenal food, but having a terrible service experience.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go back.
As far as the service experience with McDonald's, though, they got smart. When you do a drive-through, they've got a recorded voice that welcomes you to the restaurant. It's not the guy in the cash register or taking your order or the girl. And I think that's really smart from their perspective.
Well,
it's a friendly, warm voice.
You're in the recording business, Ray, and you started talking back to that recording device, and they didn't respond to you, so you liked it.
No, I think they did a really good, smart thing by replacing, just the common hourly employees to greet somebody from McDonald's.
Well, it's an interesting idea. And by the way, Scott, you don't know this. My co-host here, Ray Shillins, had a birthday earlier this week.
Oh, what day?
Yeah. Well, was it Tuesday or Tuesday?
Tuesday, right.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Go Libras.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, I asked Ray, and Ray's older than me. I always like to make that clear. But I asked Ray earlier this week. I said, we have Scott Bedberry on as a guest. And, if I were to name, if I were to ask you to name the top five brands in America, I'm sure two companies that he's been involved with, both Nike and Starbucks, would be two of the five. And he said, I agree. I said, well, name three more. He says, Viagra, Botox, and Depends.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that is any reflection on Ray's age or what's going on in his world right now. But
you take that grief all the time, Ray?
Yeah, but you know what? I just totally ignore it. What did he say?
2 hours a week he takes that grief.
Yeah,
the rest of the time, you should see what he does to me off the air.
Exactly. I'd love to torment the man.
Yeah. And you still have that leather outfit over there,
exactly,
right?
Exactly right.
Thank you.
Tell me your take on the Kmart thing with Martha and how do you think how they can build their brand back?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, because anybody competing with Walmart is competing with more than just a store. You know, it's that the back room, the whole supply chain operation side to Walmart, right down to how they the force they wield in procuring product and getting the costs out of it. That's their secret weapon, and it's tough. Frankly, I think it's you don't want to be in the middle there. You know, neither fish nor fowl. And I think if you go upscale, you've got to recognize that it's a smaller market over time. But I don't know. I get the feeling, in my own personal experience with Kmart, they just sort of stopped evolving. I think a couple decades went by, and they just sort of motored along like so many companies. And save for Martha and a couple other interesting products that came and went, I think they just sort of sat on their hands.
Mm-hmm. I think Target is doing a good job of, they've got that dog now. Have you seen those commercials, Brent?
I think, yeah.
Those are great.
Yes, I have.
And Scott?
I agree, and they've stayed with that. And going back to Kmart, I have a friend that works as a global creative director for Gray New York, and Gray New York just picked up Kmart. I was talking to him the other day. I said, do you guys get cash in advance with these folks or what, you know? You're talking about consumer and retail. What would you consider, Scott, your greatest accomplishment while you were a CMO at Nike?
Well, my role at Nike really was sort of the global advertising chief, you know, more than anything. In fact, when I joined, we didn't even have a marketing group. It was a bunch of different disciplines working together. I think the greatest accomplishment, you know, and it probably doesn't get much ink. In fact, it didn't get any ink at all, was hiring good people.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own group, and then taking a small, I mean, Wieden and Kennedy had 9 people when I joined Nike. Very small, relatively unproven agency, and very inconsistent creatively, but boy, did they have some firepower.
And Wieden and Kennedy was already the agency when you joined Nike?
Yeah, but they, you know, they were splitting the biz recently before that with Shiat Day, and mm-hmm. I think the total billings were $8 million in media. And I think Wieden's fee at the time was $100,000 a month. And I had one part-time account soup, one part-time AE, and I had half of a creative team, then Dan and David. That was it.
Hmm.
So I think the thing that probably doesn't get much press in terms of the Nike success is how we built it in terms of what kind of people came into the organization, in the case of the advertising, both organizations, and how we became probably the best client-agency relationship on the planet.
And, you know, after the break, I want to talk to you about whether Dan Wieden and Dave Kennedy stayed involved with your account as the agency grew and as you grew. I think I already know the answer to that, but we'll do that after the break.
Yeah, we'll hang on to that answer, hang on to that question, too. It's a new brand world, 8 principles for achieving brand leadership in the 21st century. Our special guest today is the author of that book, Scott Bedbury, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. On the way, we've got the wacky world of marketing. We've got another feature from the comical humorist. Well, he's a humorist. He ought to be funny, right? Andy Borowitz coming up later this hour. With Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, we'll be back in just a minute.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to New York, where the New York Post reports, who says they've cleaned up Times Square? Not without Martha they haven't, says John Small. Small is leading a campaign to buy a Save Martha Stewart billboard just in time for the Queen of Housekeeping's January 12th trial for insider trading. His website, SaveMartha.com, has raised about $2,000 so far, and only 18,000 more to go. The If the Stock Sale Was Legit, You Must Acquit billboard in Times Square, listing the names of all the donors with a Honk If You Love Martha tagline. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. To To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Oh, he looks really funny tonight, wasn't he? Coffee?
That's another funny joke.
Oh, Mrs. Olson, I just can't make good coffee.
Judy, good coffee is no problem with Folgers.
Folgers is mountain grown, the richest kind.
She sounds kind of like Dr. Ruth, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She had the same, ladies coming to talk with her about their problems.
Turn your
not
head.
Not about sexual, but making coffee problems.
Turn right? your head and blow on your coffee.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So it's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and our special guest today is Scott Bedbury, author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century.
And if you know Nike and you know Starbucks, you know some of Scott's background. Scott, welcome back to the show. What I wanted to ask you, a lot of people when they think about Nike, they think about the, many consumers would say unusual, off-the-wall television advertising, the use of athletes to be able to convey a brand, not necessarily a message, but a brand. When Nike developed Nike Town, I remember years ago I was in San Francisco there in the square, and I saw Nike Town and decided to go in. And, man, I got to tell you, it was really the most unusual retail experience at that point I'd ever had. And I would say that Nike was really taking some huge risk with their retail channels at that time, but yet it was very innovative for them to do that. For those people that may not be familiar with Nike Town, talk a little bit about the concept and ultimately how that Nike concept helped their retail channel.
It was one of the best things I think we did. It actually goes all the way back to 1988, and Nike had a key relationship. I think it was with the what's now Foot Locker and Lady Foot and whatnot, big company back east that was flexing its muscle, and the relationship was at a low point. And Phil Knight took a few of us off-site and said he wanted two plans. One was what to do if we lost distribution with that account, and two, how do you go to war with them? And the second plan was how do we make love to them? And he said, I'm not sure which one's worse.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with what the core of the idea of the Nike Town concept, built the first one in Portland, I believe, in 1989, and then Michigan Avenue in 1990 or 91. And what we were trying to do there, basically, was understand retail. And then we found that the demand for Nike was much greater than the present retail channel was allocating space for, and that the apparel business we had could be 10 times larger than it was, but mm-hmm. we couldn't change the buying behavior of the retail channel. So they became laboratories, and we opened up the books and brought the retailer buyers in and said, this is what's happening. This is full-price retail, and you guys are missing a tremendous opportunity. And on our side, too, it was great for the brand. It was complete storytelling, our control. It was our ability to sort of merchandise and segment and inspire the consumers. And what happened, within a few years, we changed the way 30,000 retail stores around the world bought Nike, merchandised it, and sold it, leading by example.
And did you have some resistance from your bigger retail channels when you...
Oh, you better believe it. And that goes to that conversation about risk. But we had already had, there was risk already on the table in terms of feeling they were being forced to have our brand be denigrated. I think if you look at what Apple's doing in retail right now, it's no different.
Mm-hmm.
What Steve Jobs has done. And if you haven't been to an Apple retail store, I highly recommend it.
Right.
And I think companies today, brands, have to really look at retail carefully, and maybe they can't replace it, and maybe they shouldn't. But they certainly should lead it and inspire it. And sometimes the best way to do that is to build a few brand showrooms.
And I
honestly, worldwide, I don't think Nike's got more than 20 of those around the world. It's not like Disney with a couple thousand retail stores.
Right. The San Francisco store, what rollout was that in the Nike Town
Would have been, I think, the fourth or fifth.
Was it
Portland, Chicago, Atlanta, Orange County, and then I think it was San Francisco and
mm-hmm.
then New York.
Yeah, it was certainly very impressive. So do you see the relationship between brands and consumers? Where do you see that evolving to over, the next decade or so?
I think consumers, the brands that they like, they want to be acknowledged for that. And I'm not saying it's as simple as a loyalty program, but I think they want to be respected. They want to be acknowledged in some way. At Starbucks, we train the baristas to visually or verbally greet every customer within a minute of walking in that door. Sooner the better. And you may not know their name, but you probably remember their drink. And if you do remember their drink, take a shot at saying, is that a double short, non-fat latte? And that just blows people away
mm-hmm.
when someone remembers something about them.
Mm-hmm.
So So I think that's one. And then the other is leveraging technology in some way. I think there's some companies out there that are moving towards mass customization, where customers can get exactly what they want. And I think that's a big trend.
You know, technology, we just have a little over a minute left here. Technology has been not only something great for retail, but it's actually worked against more of the long horizon views of many CEOs and CMOs, because I think Jerry Delafamina said a few weeks ago here on the show that back in the 60s and 70s, he was doing advertising where he would say, "Are you having a good year?" And that went evolved to, "Are you having a good quarter?" And fast forward to today, which is, "Are you having a good day?" Because you can see the results of real-time activity at the retail level. Does that work against risk-taking and maybe more of a long-term commitment to ideas and concepts?
I think it does. And certainly at Starbucks, we had it down to, well, how did we do yesterday morning versus that same morning 365 days ago? And then you could break it down by market, by store type, even by product type. So I think what you have, you're swimming in numbers. And all of that, to me, is one hell of a big rearview mirror, but very few companies look out the windshield.
Mm-hmm. They tend to guide their company through the rearview mirror, which is obviously always dangerous and doesn't allow for any commitment to innovation, don't you think?
Well, it also forces incrementalism. That forces us to look at what we did last year, let's just do it a little bit better this year. And I think you're never going to get transformational thinking in that kind of environment.
We're going to continue this conversation here in just a moment. We're going to take a break with Scott Bedbury, author of A New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, we'll take a break and come right back.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Colgate toothpaste, the tooth toughener. How can that be? Well, it contains advanced MFP fluoride. It's the only toothpaste that does, and it does toughen tooth enamel. With tougher enamel, the children won't have so many cavities.
Want to sell your product? Get a good spokesperson, one who's believable and one who does a good job as a pitch man. You don't have to get too fancy. Just tell the truth.
Well, and you can't get Arthur Godfrey anymore.
No, if you could, you'd get pretty fancy then, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I guess so. So our special guest today is Scott Bedbury. We've got one more segment here with Scott. Learned a lot about his background with Nike and with Starbucks, of course, two great brands.
Yeah, well, let's open the head of Scott Bedbury and get into the way you think, Scott, if you don't mind. What's the best lesson you've learned about branding or brand management so far in your career?
Well, I think it's probably just to be brutally honest. We live in an increasingly transparent business age these days, and thanks to the Internet, you know, it only takes one disgruntled employee and one interested journalist. And if you're not walking the talk from your brand position, you're in trouble quickly. And consumers are less likely to forgive than I have ever seen them. And there's a real crisis of trust out there. So I think just being pure, being authentic, being real, not trying to be something you're not, and above all else, stop over-promising and under-delivering. That's probably the best advice I can give anybody, and probably my best learning. And then the bigger you get, you know, poke fun at yourself. Just be human. You're not perfect. And we certainly did a lot of that at Nike. We poked fun at marketing, and we poked fun at, you know, sneakers. So I think there's a humanization of brands, of which advertising plays a critical role. But I think to do that, you have to start with having a very honest perspective and opinion and commitment to your consumers.
Of the large companies out there today, the top 100, say, Fortune 100, how many of these companies do you feel the senior executives, the CEOs, CMOs, and others really get out from behind their desk and know who their customers are, and more importantly, know that their employees and their stakeholders are delivering on what they're promoting through their communication vehicles?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's a fraction, but I'm impressed by how that's changing. And I hear from a lot of CEOs looking for some help, either just mentoring or coaching or specific projects, but it all seems to be in the same area of how do I get closer to the consumer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I've done in the past is not right. I really have reservations about our marketing practices historically, So I think we're seeing certainly an awareness, but now there's a commitment to trying to do things in a way that maybe takes them down a different path. And I think getting closer to the consumer is step one, and that means getting out of your office.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the power of the brand is really understood?
You know, well, the part of the problem there is you can't really quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where do you put that on the balance sheet? You can probably get there by some approximation of goodwill. And in some countries like the UK, they're beginning to try and get there and force companies to disclose, you know, a profit or loss, if you will, in terms of the value of the corporation from one year to another. And if there's a big crisis, for example, and the goodwill has been cut in half, increasingly, I think in some areas of the world, you're going to see that having to be reported. So I think that's historically been the problem with it. If it can't be valued accurately, then why am I paying attention to it?
So if you're consulting with a company and they say, I like the way you think, you've got some great ideas there, Scott, and I understand what you're talking about as far as a commitment, but we need to answer to Wall Street and our board, how do we gauge an ROI on our branding effort?
Well, what I like to do is build a brand strength monitor. This is something we did at Nike, and as you recall from my book, you know, we didn't pretest any of the advertising. But I also wanted sort of a radar screen. I wanted to know what key consumer segments felt about the brand, not just did they agree with sort of the product direction or did they like the advertising or were they even aware of us. That meant nothing to me, really. It was how did they feel? What words did they use to describe us? And how deeply did we resonate with them? And we fielded that three times a year, and that became the counterbalance to the profit line, if you will. We could see market share. We could track sales. We could track all that, earnings per share. But I was doubly worried, though, about were we harvesting brand equity to get to those numbers, or were we actually building it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think increasingly companies are beginning to adopt some kind of brand measurement mechanism that helps them understand if they've actually put coins in the well or if they've actually made a big withdrawal.
Right. And so if you look at sales and sales are up and you're looking at your brand as it relates to your consumers and getting a gauge on that, you've got to suggest or take away from that evaluation that one is influencing the other, and I think a lot of companies don't bother giving credit where credit will
go. You know, when I was at Nike, there, at any given time, we could have opened up the Sears account, which we had stepped out of about 1986, I believe, and could have written $1 billion in revenue. This is on top of probably a base of $2 billion at the time. And we didn't, because at the time, it would have denigrated the long-term value of the brand, and Nike was more committed to the athletic specialty stores.
Scott, we are out of time here for this portion of the interview, but thanks for being with us here on the Advertising Show. It's a new brand world, 8 principles for achieving brand leadership in the 21st century. If you want to find out more about Scott's company, go to brandstream.com. Scott, thanks for being on the show today.
Glad to be here.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Good morning. Are you not my daisies?
Right, Mother Nature. They're Chiffon's new daisy servers. Taste.
Oh, it's my sweet, creamy butter.
Nope, it's new chiffon margarine. Chiffon has the fresh-churned flavor of butter.
It's chiffon margarine, not butter. Oh, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
There's a good tagline that would have stuck around a while. You know, it's not nice to fool. Like George Whipple's spot, too. Same thing, don't squeeze the Charmin.
And what do those two have in common? Consistency.
Yeah.
They ran them for many years.
Right. Well, the same thing with the Meow Mix commercials. Remember, who was that? Was that Delafamina?
Yep.
I think it was.
Sure was. And, you know, think about it. How often today, and there are some exceptions to this, but how often do today you see a campaign that was running 3-4 years ago? People are so hung up on wanting to freshen up their advertising.
Yeah, what a mistake.
And it's okay to freshen up a theme or a campaign.
But you keep the common thread.
Exactly.
Yeah, what built your brand to begin with?
And I think a good example of maybe getting a little off of that is Aflac. Now, there they've brought in celebrities now involved in those spots. I think...
Chevy Chase is a waste of time to put in that spot.
The duck is the star.
The duck is the star.
Yeah. I don't know why they're doing that. But
yeah, makes
anyway.
Much sense.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods won the American Express golf championship. It was, weekend ago?
He needs the money.
Well, no, I don't think so. But he's a spokesperson for American Express,
well,
right?
Well, that's a good tie-in.
Now Tiger is starring in a new Accenture campaign. Accenture launched a campaign featuring a Tiger in print and television and the outdoor ads in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Campaign is from WPP Group's, PP Group's Y&R in New York. Tagged High Performance Delivered, the campaign is part of a multi-year agreement between the consulting firm and Mr. Woods.
Well, and Accenture, of course, was formerly known as Anderson Consulting, and, of course, that was good timing in separating that name.
How about
from,
that?
Yeah, from
yes,
the
exactly.
fine folks there.
They're doing a good job with Tiger, though, all of the things he's branding now. They're doing it right.
I hear that he's driving a Buick, has his American Express in his hand, and he's going through, what does he do? Does he do Burger King? He does some fast food, I thought.
I do not know that.
No?
No. He might. No, I doubt if he'd do fast food. He's a health food nut.
He is?
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, does he drive a Buick?
On
he probably
hand,
uses American Express.
I'm sure he
I'll
does.
Give him that.
Yeah.
But I don't think he drives a Buick.
Do we have time for Andy? You want to drop something in here? Why don't you go ahead and drop something in?
You don't want to do Andy first?
Andy?
Okay. All right, well, let's drop something in here. I'll do a quick one.
Do it.
There is an international cable channel reality TV coming to America.
There is.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily reality TV as
just
we know
we
it.
We need more.
Yeah, the network apparently will offer non-scripted programming that sounds more like the Learning Channel than Survivor or Queer Eye. Apparently, the channel's shows have been described as unscripted, caught-on-camera programming, anything from a maternity ward to funny home videos. So far, reality TV, which will debut in the United States later this year, has a carriage deal with EchoStar Communications to be carried on its Dish network. We're all familiar with that. Internationally, the channel reaches 35 million homes with a library of over 2,000 hours of programming, so that's how they're able to launch this network with not a whole lot of money. Usually it takes about $100 million,
right.
Ray, to get a network channel off the ground.
$10
Well,
for
$10 million, it's interesting. They're mentioning tens of millions because of the low cost of entry with all that programming.
That's the real news. Let's hit the fake news now.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from the Borowitz Report.
An unnamed White House source has vigorously denied leaking classified information about a CIA operative, sending the White House scrambling to identify the source of the leaked denial. The unnamed source leaked a strongly worded denial of the previous leak in phone conversations with over 200 newspaper columnists across the country. "We are not in the business of leaking information," the unnamed source said. Ben Trimble, a political columnist for the Canton, Ohio Star-Ledger, attempted to star 69 the call in order to identify the source of the leaked denial, but to no avail. "It wouldn't disclose the phone number or the location," Mr. Trimble said. "That kind of made me think it was Dick Cheney." At the White House, spokesman Scott McClellan said that the administration would launch a full investigation to determine the source of the leaked denials. "If someone is out there denying leaks, that is very serious business," Mr. McClellan said. "Denying leaks is my job." But moments after Mr. McClellan spoke, columnists received a new round of anonymous phone calls, this time denying that the White House had been the source of the earlier denials. As the number of anonymous leaks from the White House mounts to a dozen or more a day, newspaper columnists are increasingly signing up for the federal Do Not Call list to keep unnamed White House sources from bothering them at home. "The first couple of leaks I didn't mind," said the Star-Ledger's Trimble, "but these guys keep calling me at dinner time."
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
Well, I tell you, time flies today here on the Advertising Show. We are out of time. Unbelievable. Great interview with Scott Bedbury. Go get the book, New Brand World, 8 Principles for Achieving Brand Leadership in the 21st Century. Look forward to talking with Frank Zaza next week, Creative Director and CEO of ITVX here on the Advertising Show. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. So, fun show today. Look forward to getting together next week, Brad, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
I'll be here.
You will? That's a good thing.
How about you?
There you go. I think I'll plan on that, too.
Yeah.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Don't forget to stay in touch at theadvertisingshow.com throughout the week. It's a Big Radio Midgets production here on the SSI Radio Network.